I love sitting with them when they have like epiphanies, watching like whether that's in Bible study or like a discipleship kind of conversation, when they realize like, oh my gosh, I think God is calling me to this, or like, wait, this makes sense in a way that it never has before. And just being in that space feels like such like sacred, like holy space.
This is the HBIC Podcast, our discipleship weekly, where we talk with folks from HBIC and dig into the practical side of following Jesus in their lives. I'm Ryan Gagneau. This week I talked with Hannah Marie Wolin, who serves with InterVarsity at Penn State Harrisburg, about her life and story, her ministry there with college students, the challenges, the blessings, what they have to offer, and to teach us insight on ministering to Gen Z folks, interacting with them and what they need in Christ. So a really good combo. Enjoy, subscribe, new episodes weekly on Fridays. Hannah Marie Wolin, welcome to the HBIC Podcast.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. You and your husband Bryce have been a part of HBIC for a year and a half or 2 years?
A year and a half.
A year and a half.
That's kind of wild.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Just about?
Yeah. We first came when Bryce was still a student at Messiah and visited a couple times. And that was like spring of 22.
Yeah.
And then we got married in June. And we were living over in the Hershey area. So for a while, we were trying to find a church like closer in that area. And we looked for months and we're kind of struggling. And then one weekend when Bryce was working, I came here by myself because I was like, I think this was the last church that I actually really, really liked.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember that Hank's sermon was so good. People were so friendly. And I just like started crying in the back. I was like, yep, this is where we need to be. So for a while we were driving like almost half an hour to come to church, and now we're closer, which is nice.
Okay. Where did you move to? Middletown-ish?
We're in Mechanicsburg now, but we're pretty close to the highway, so we just jump right on and
yeah.
Doesn't take too long.
There's lots of Mechanicsburg folks. We should start a shuttle bus or something like that.
Probably, yeah.
Which hospital does Bryce work at now?
He's at Hershey Medical.
Oh, so he's still driving over there. Okay.
Yep.
Cool. So that fall of 2022-ish, when you started coming, was that also when you started at Penn State Harrisburg?
Yes, same time.
Yeah. Not to jump ahead. I want to hear more. Your life didn't start when you started doing InterVarsity at Penn State Harrisburg, so I want to jump back. But, okay, that was like kind of when you got your footing and started there.
Yeah, it was lots of new stuff. First year of marriage, first year on a new campus, new church.
You might as well do it all at once.
Yeah.
First year in a job is hard. First year in marriage is hard.
Yeah.
Let's just get after it all in one shot. Yeah. I imagine this year's been a little better.
It has been.
Yeah.
A lot better.
Yeah. It tends to go that way. So where did you like grow up, and you know, how did you find your way to, I guess, dating a guy from Messiah, et cetera?
Yeah. Wow, this could be a really long story. So
go for
I'll keep it short.
I'll edit out the boring parts. It's fine.
Okay, sounds good. I trust you. Yeah, I'm from Michigan originally. I grew up like a little bit north of Ann Arbor where U of M is. Not a U of M fan though, don't worry.
Boo, go blue.
I know.
No, not go blue. We are.
I didn't even realize how much like Penn State people don't like U of M, but it's understandable.
Even though they just beat us all the time, it's still...
Yeah. But that was one of the first things that I clarified when I met Bryce. Like, don't worry, not a U of M fan.
Yeah.
So
are you a Michigan State fan or what?
Maybe. My grandparents on my mom's side went to MSU. So between the two of them, I'd take MSU. But my parents went to Purdue. So
okay.
That's a Big Ten team that no one really hates because we're never like – good enough for people to be that mad at us.
No, I guess not. I know you produced Drew Brees, and that's about the extent of it.
Yeah.
And you have the coolest name, like the Boilermakers. That's a really cool like mascot.
Most people are like, what is that?
I actually don't know. I imagine like a water heater in my own head, but I don't know.
I think it has something to do with like steam trains and whatnot, but
that's where they made the boilers. It was in Purdue. Okay.
I guess so. Anyway. So I grew up in Michigan. I went to a school called Hope College for my undergrad, and it's really similar in size to Messiah, small Christian school in West Michigan. And yeah, I loved it. It was a great experience that being there, and working in the campus ministries office as like a secretary kind of thing, getting to interact with the chaplains and the people who did college ministry for a living. I was like, oh my gosh, you guys are the coolest. I want to be like you when I grow up. This is awesome. That was like sort of the spark, of like wanting to do college ministry. But, I actually had an opportunity while I was at Hope the summer after my junior year to travel with a group of college students to the Holy Land. So it was a 2-week kind of study tour all over Israel, Palestine, and we got to visit the campus of a school in Jerusalem called Jerusalem University College. And long story short, I ended up feeling like the fall of my senior year, feeling God prompt me to apply to that school for after graduation, which, you know, on paper didn't make a lot of sense. It's not an accredited school by U.S. standards. I could get a master's of arts in biblical history and geography there, but, you know, what? That's not a lot. There's not a lot of places to use that back here in the States. So my parents were like, well, you know, maybe if you find a seminary that would accept those credits from that school, then we'd be okay with you going. And I ended up finding a school. And so I went fall of 2019 to Jerusalem University College to study with the intention of only being there for one semester. But then I ended up staying a second semester. So I was there spring of 2020 also.
Quiet time in the world. Nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, and I got like a graduate certificate in the Hebraic roots of Christianity, which is like a really obnoxiously long name. but it was amazing. And it was the fall semester that I was there that I met Bryce, and he was a Messiah student studying abroad for a semester, and we were best friends, and then we were halfway through the semester, we were more than friends.
Yeah.
And
you made it halfway through the semester. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the long story short. We dated long distance, and then eventually he convinced me to move here. So
To the Holy Land of the Northeast, Central Pennsylvania. Wow. All the way to Jerusalem to meet a guy from Messiah College.
Look, I know. I know.
That's cool. I don't know if I did know that you guys met there, I guess, but that's really cool. Now I want to just do a 30 minutes on the Hebraic roots of Christianity, because that would be, maybe we'll put a pin in that and talk about that.
We could.
We'll do two of these, and one of them can be on the Hebraic roots of Christianity.
Yeah.
Because that sounds fascinating to only me. Actually, probably a lot of people listening would be into that. So you graduated, you dated distance. Well, you came back, you finished your seminary degree at Grand Rapids Theological Seminary. You dated Bryce Distance, married him in 2022. Had you done campus ministry then prior, like in the years between graduating from your undergrad and then starting at IV, had you done campus ministry stuff or?
A little bit. So I was very confident that I wanted to do college ministry, and that even was affirmed a lot at JUC, because every semester, there's a lot of college students studying abroad, and sure. I was fresh out of college myself, so I could relate to them on that level. But I ended up leading a Bible study for like the undergrad students while I was there, the second semester, and it felt like, oh, this is, you know, kind of filling a void or like scratching an itch that I didn't have like the previous semester when I wasn't doing something like that. Because I did get to be in some leadership positions on campus, like at Hope, and get a taste of what college ministry was like. And I had fantastic mentors who were like championing me and saying like they could see me doing college ministry, which was really cool. And so when I was in seminary, my program was designed so that every semester you had a residency placement, and I chose to do all of my placements with ministries. So while I was still in Michigan, I did them at a like nearby university, their like small local college ministry that they just called CM, Campus Ministries.
Yeah.
And that was great for the 2020-2021 school year. Definitely an interesting, hard time to do ministry because the rules for COVID were changing like every week.
Right.
But it was still a great experience. And then when I moved out, or when I started praying and thinking about moving out here to Pennsylvania, I was looking for a college ministry job that could be something I could get paid for, hopefully, and then also count as my residency placement for my last year. So my last year of seminary, I was here doing everything online, and I ended up being able to work for a university, which was great.
Yeah. So tell me a little more about what exactly called out to you in regards to campus ministry. You said like you saw these people and it was like, I want to be you. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Tell me more about what exactly you were seeing that captivated you.
So I think part of it is just because my faith grew so much when I was in college. I'm a pastor's kid, even though he's not like a traditional pastor. My dad actually worked for InterVarsity for a number of years, but that was when I was a lot younger. And then he did various other ministry jobs, and then later in life found himself in pastoral ministry. But I'm still like very much a ministry kid. And then, you know, it wasn't until college when I realized, oh, this is more than going to Bible studies and like being a good kid and, you know, trying to read my Bible at least 4 out of 7 days of the week. Like this is a whole life orientation of following Jesus. And I was inspired by people my own age actively pursuing that. And it was also just, it is a wild time of like asking really big questions and being away from your parents and having your like beliefs about the world like challenged for the first time a lot. And it's just, I think also people are trying to figure out who they are and what they're doing with themselves. And so I think there's never a bad time to talk about Jesus, but college is maybe the best time, you know, to really zone in and go like, okay, what are you orienting your life around? And let me introduce you to the love of Jesus. And Yeah.
I mean, it's such a crucible time in the life of our, you know, in our lives for those of us that go away to college. But I guess in general, I'll take that back. College or not, mm-hmm. being an 18 to 24 year old or however much you want to put on that 18 to 30 year old is such a crucible time in terms of setting the direction of your life, you know, kind of stabilizing your values and your personality and then what you're going to be about and who you're going to be. So the opportunity to minister to people in that moment in their lives is huge. Mm. I came to speak at InterVarsity a couple weeks ago, and I mean, a lot of the things I said got me like incredulous stares or blank faces. But one of them was like, you know, we're just talking about, you know, fully following Jesus. And I was like, you know, you're only 21. Like, it's not too late for you. Like, to like be
that
all,
was funny
to be
that you
all in
it
on
like
this.
That.
You know what I mean? I was like, I'm 35. I'm like, it's getting to be late for me, you know? And like, obviously we can be lifelong learners. Anyone can be like open, but I was joking. I was a little serious. Like, really, like, I just believe in the power of like young people. And I just believe that they have opportunities to like follow Jesus more fully and more wholeheartedly and more quote unquote recklessly.
Yeah.
And kind of every year that goes by as you then are an adult and work and then you have rent and then maybe a mortgage, et cetera, you just accrue more and more of these kind of like, I don't know, these ties to the world or the American dream or whatever you want to call it. It just like creeps up on you, and suddenly we're going to soccer practice and driving a minivan and blah, blah, blah. And all that is good. Those are good blessings from God. But sometimes, you know, there's so much power in like a 21-year-old person who's just like all in.
Yeah.
You know, there's my sermon, but no, you get to see that, you know, I mean, you get to see that kind of, you get to be with students who are kind of in that space, who are hopefully thinking radically about like what they're doing with their lives.
And yeah. Yeah. There's, it's interesting because when you meet those students who really are like more radical as you're, I like that you're using that term, that are all in and willing to have their lives like very disrupted by Jesus and their preconceived ideas about what it means to be an adult or what their life is going to look like someday. When you meet those students who are open to that, it's so exciting. There's, you know, it's not all of them. There's a lot who
sure
just grew up in church and feel like they want to just be around other Christians because that's what's comfortable. But in InterVarsity, we really value like challenging people to step out of their comfort zones. So having you come and speak was good because you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I could tell by some of the faces that some of it was appreciated more than others. I mean, because the sermon was, I just tried to, I don't know what I was thinking besides just like, let me poke on all the things I can poke on. I think the prompt was like, staying true to the values of Jesus in a world that doesn't value what he does.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a mouthful. And like, it was just like, okay, well, what are all right. The values of Jesus often are going to push us towards those radical places, mm-hmm. push us away from the American dream and away from,
yeah.
which I think can be a powerful message when people are making those decisions that are going to set the course of their like life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So are we going to value financial stability and, influence and prominence and these and family and these other things, or are we going to be radical about Jesus? And it's cool because they, college kids all have that opportunity. Whereas as you get older and older, you, I mean, you see it with like missionaries or people that are in, I think like, you know, are following a radical call to Jesus. You tend to see it more as like an exceptional case, I guess, than like the norm, which is sad.
Yeah.
But I'm soapboxing in ways that now I can start offending all the people that are listening to this podcast as well. And I don't mean to, because there's tons of ways to follow Jesus, and you can follow Jesus in your minivan at soccer practice as well as anyone. But yeah, there's just something about that unencumbered. If we take Jesus at his word of like anyone who doesn't hate mother and father and sister and brother for my sake, or take Paul at his word of, you know, the person who gets married and takes on these other things, like has these otherworldly concerns, but the person who doesn't can just be like totally devoted to the Lord. Challenging ourselves. Like, would we really want that life of being totally devoted? Or just more single-mindedly devoted, I should say. Anyway.
Yeah.
Really cool. What what's been challenging in these first, you know, year and a half, almost 2 years now that you've been at Penn State Harrisburg?
Yeah.
What's been challenging in that for you, trying to minister in that space and join students in their journey?
Yeah. Wow. I think it has been, not what I expected necessarily. I came into this new campus, like, naively optimistic, which I think was maybe also the grace of God, like, that I just was like, oh, yeah, I'll go fill a need. I'll step in. So the scenario at Penn State Harrisburg before I got there was basically Jesse Stoll, who is at our church. It's like one of the reasons why my husband and I started coming to HBIC. He had been at Penn State Harrisburg for a long time, their primary staff, but left because he felt God calling him more to hack and like campuses in Harrisburg, because even though it's Penn State Harrisburg, it's in Middletown.
Sure is.
It is feels like the middle of nowhere sometimes.
Sure does.
So he sort of left a gap there, and there was a staff named Liz who was primarily working at Dickinson who stepped up and said, okay, I'll go to Penn State Harrisburg one day a week. So she was 30 hours a week at Dickinson, 10 at Penn State Harrisburg. And Liz is who I was sort of apprenticing under during my first year on staff with InterVarsity. I actually got to live with her and her husband in Carlisle while Bryce and I were engaged and I was finishing seminary and all of that, to learn the ropes of InterVarsity, because I didn't experience InterVarsity as a college student. So that was a really great year. And then she was pregnant with her second child and kind of wondering, like, how is this going to work? How am I going to do two campuses and two small children? And Bryce got a job at Hershey, and I said, oh, well, we'll be over that direction anyway. Maybe I can just go staff at Penn State Harrisburg. And she and her husband, Andrew, were like, oh my gosh, this is great. So excited. Everyone was like thrilled that Penn State Harrisburg was going to have a full-time staff. And I had really like no idea what I was getting myself into in a lot of ways. I had been there and experienced the fellowship, but they're an interesting bunch because they really kind of got to form their own culture. With Liz being only part-time, it meant that students had to step up and lead, which was so amazing in a lot of ways because they feel a lot of ownership around the fellowship. And that's sometimes really hard to, it's really hard to force that. You can't make people feel ownership. And it's so great because InterVarsity wants to be very student-led. Like, we believe that's how students grow, is by taking on responsibility and doing the ministry themselves. But for me to come in, a like young woman who's only like five-ish years older than some of them, they're kind of like, what are you doing here? And I think at first, you know, they liked me well enough, but then when I started trying to lead things or change things, they were like, whoa, 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 that's not how we run. And without going into too much detail, like, I got pretty hurt at different points by students organizing secret meetings without me and just finding out that some of them were like, well, we don't even really need you. We don't get why you're here. We were doing fine without you. And so that was really challenging to me spiritually, because I'm still learning the job and still grappling a lot with like what it means to be a person in ministry. And I realized that way too much of my identity was wrapped up in it, and was wrapped up in like my students' perceptions of me and approval of me. And so that was, it was a lot to be going through again, also during my first year of marriage. And, yeah, but things have been a lot better now. And I think, you know, some students come from backgrounds where women in ministry is not a thing. So that's just interesting for them. They are like, okay, well, you're not calling yourself a pastor, so maybe we're fine with you. But also, like, when I speak, which my supervisor wants me to do once a semester, I always get a little anxious about, like, how are they going to receive this? And, you know, that kind of thing. So it's been interesting.
Yeah. I've had the experience a couple times of stepping into a new ministry space and feeling, especially as a younger person, stepping into an existing culture where lots of aspects of it are self-sustained and they're doing it, and that's great, feeling like, what exactly am I supposed to do here?
Mm-hmm.
And what does it mean for me to be a minister in this space when I'm, you know, when I'm new and I'm young in this, you know, and there's people that are older than me that I'm supposed to be their pastor. I still feel that way sometimes here.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Like, what do I have to offer in this situation? I've never had to deal with that as a woman, which seems like it would just exponentially complicate or make more difficult, you know, these kind of imposter syndrome type things.
Yeah.
Of just feeling like, how do I feel like secure and confident in this role and in this space? I've never had to then also have, you know, the women in ministry aspect to it. I imagine that was, I mean, emotionally and just existentially really tough.
Yeah, it was, especially since I've been extremely lucky in my life not to have many people tell me, oh, you can't go into ministry or you shouldn't do this because you're a woman.
That's great.
The church I grew up in, there's a really amazing woman in leadership. She was not given the title pastor, but she is basically functions as a pastor. That's a whole nother conversation. She
lots of churches have that person that's yeah, not the pastor, but everyone knows they're the pastor. Yeah.
She had a huge impact on my life, and just being able to look up to her and see, like, wow, a woman really can, like, lead and do a lot in ministry. And, like, all the internships I had and my seminary residencies and stuff, like, I was very much empowered to do ministry. And then this was kind of the first time when I realized, oh, part of the reason I might not be being received well is because I'm a woman. And initially, you know, I had some reactions of like, oh, am I being overdramatic? Am I reading too far into things? But then it was actually the men on InterVarsity staff who said, like, no, this is happening because, in part, because you're female, and you're not much older than them. And that's why they're not, you know, that's a reason why they're probably not, like, respecting you. So,
yeah. I think I maybe told you this before. I'm not sure. But I had a friend in seminary. She was pursuing ordination in the Episcopal Church.
Okay.
She was probably 25 at that point, and she went through seminary, was a great student, checked all the boxes, like applied for ordination, like went or licensure, however they do it, ordination, I think, in the Episcopal Church. And at that point she got rejected, and a mentor kind of pulled her aside and apologized to her on behalf of whoever makes that decision and said, like, listen, to be like, at the reality is, to be ordained, like, you can be a woman or you can be young, but you can't be both.
Wow.
She did thankfully eventually get ordained, and this is in the Episcopal Church where there's long-standing precedent.
That's surprising.
Not like an open question for them about women's ordination, but just from a being able to garner like the respect and different things. So it's a heartbreaking reality in some places, I guess, that Yeah. Being a woman is a complicating factor, and then also like our age, you know, which I have experienced that one plenty. But yeah. It's very different as a man. People expect a 25-year-old young man to like be a pastor in in training or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's like a thing they've seen more and they expect, and you know, you might be young, but you're going to like grow into it. But people tend to have this kind of default, at the very least, like lack of exposure to like young women in ministry leadership.
Yeah. One of the first things people usually ask me is, does your husband work for InterVarsity too?
Right.
And
they would never ask me that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it would be cool if he did. That's not the calling
Come on,
God has placed on his life. He says all the time, I could never do what you do. And I throw it right back at him because being a nurse is incredibly hard. And he works so hard. So we're like very non-traditional in that way, of like me being the one in ministry. But yeah. Yeah, I had a woman on staff with InterVarsity. She's been working with InterVarsity for 30-something years, speak into my life a lot over the summer last year when I was really wrestling with a lot of this and sort of dreading coming back to campus for this school year. And she did a really great job of listening, and she's experienced her fair share of, you know, rejection and pushback being a woman. And she said something that I think will stick with me for years to come. She let me like cry, you know, and, kind of complain. And then she said, we can't expect to become like Jesus without experiencing what he did. And she said, Jesus experienced rejection. You're experiencing rejection. She was like, it hurts, but I think this is part of the process of becoming more like Jesus.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. He experienced a lot of rejection, right? So it's like, and said, if this is how they treat me, they're not going to treat you better than this.
Right.
So if we're getting into ministry and thinking that's a pathway to adulation and to respect and to, you know, everyone lifting you up on their shoulders and cheering for you.
Yeah.
Some people do experience that. And if you do experience that, maybe you should, like, maybe it's fair to wonder, like, well, am I really...
Am I doing this right?
Am I being as faithful to Christ as I should be in this scenario that everyone around me is just like, you know, and it's a wonderful thing when a church comes around you and support, and this church is so wonderful with that. But that's great solace to know that, like, okay, when we're experiencing rejection, when ministry is hard, when people are not just like getting baptized left and right, and, yeah. And aren't, you know, respecting your authority or whatever, your leadership. Yeah. Well, go read the Gospels, because,
yeah.
You know, Jesus kind of, it was more the exception than the rule that he was received well.
Yeah.
So that's a good word. What's been the biggest, like, blessing? I mean, that was a lot of challenge.
Yeah.
Right there. What's been the big blessing? And then I have one other question.
Wow. There's so many different ways I could answer this question. I think I learned so much last year from all of the hardship, and I've grown a lot. And Bryce was the one who actually helped me realize, like, that I needed to grow in confidence, not confidence in that my students liked me and approved of me, but in like who I am and who God made me to be and how he's like equipped me and walking with me in this role. So that was a huge lesson to learn. And I also learned, and I'm still in the process of doing this, but to like separate my identity, in Christ from like my identity as a person in ministry. And it's like, is an ongoing thing. I still have to remind myself, but learning that and realizing like who I am through that was huge. But when it comes to just like being with students and the blessing of like getting to walk with them, I love sitting with them when they have like epiphanies, watching like whether that's in Bible study or like a discipleship kind of conversation when they realize like, oh my gosh, I think God is calling me to this, or like, wait, this makes sense in a way that it never has before. And just being in that space feels like such like sacred, like holy space. I also like Penn State Harrisburg has its challenges for sure. But they're also like some of what makes the best ministry. You've got students who commute from the surrounding rural areas that grew up in very like conservative Christian backgrounds. And then you've got international students from all over the world. Like a third of the campus is international students. And I love that. I love meeting international students. I love learning from them about their cultures. I love having them teach me little bits of their language, all of it. And it's really hard to bring those two worlds together sometimes, but when you see it done well, that is like one of the most encouraging and edifying things, because it's like a little picture of heaven, you know, when you've got Indian students and like West African students and Lancaster County students all worshiping together, and like learning from each other. It's so cool.
That's really good.
Yeah.
As a last word, you're being listened to primarily by people at this church right now. What would you want them to know about local college students, about people of this age in general, you know, that would help them better to kind of love and support and interact with them, whether they're coming through the doors of this church or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny because as staff, we talk a lot about Gen Z and like how to disciple Gen Z. And I technically am Gen Z. I'm like right on the cutoff.
How should we disciple you, Hannah?
Yeah. No, I will find myself talking about Gen Z sometimes as if I'm not one of them. And I'm like, oh, wait, I need to like, yeah, remember this. College students right now are, many of them are still affected by like the COVID years and just like lacking, sometimes like knowledge of how to connect to one another. Like there's, I think we can see definitely, some social like struggles just because COVID threw things off. Not in every student's case, but that's still there. And just like longing for connection. And I think they want clarity. Like they want to know what's happening all the time. And that sometimes like even from me, like when we're studying the Bible, they want to know like, what does this mean? What's the right answer? What's like the way to do things? You know, whenever it comes to me trying to challenge them or whatever, they want so much clarity, and life isn't always black and white like that. So walking alongside them in that is interesting. I don't even know if I'm answering your question well.
No, that's really insightful.
Yeah. But at the same time, they want independence. They want ownership. So there's this strange battle of like, don't tell me what to do, but also tell me what to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if both of those things are normal in that phase of life, and how much of it is conditioned by the fact that, you know, 4 years ago, our whole society went through this like communal trauma.
Yeah.
And I don't use that word lightly, but when you go through 3, 6, 9 months, a year of just total uncertainty on every side, and then things continue to just feel like they're in flux.
Yeah.
And you experience that when you're 17, 18, 19 years old. We still really need, you're stepping out into the world and you mm-hmm. really need, you know, we all need, but especially as we're younger and developing, like a clear sense of that the world around us is going to be consistent, you know, mm-hmm. and stable, and the people around us are not all going to go crazy for 9 months or a year.
Yeah.
And it, yeah. So it would make sense to me that that generation, your generation, to a greater degree, maybe, but in a similar way to all of us, kind of need that kind of like stability and clarity and like answers. And yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good word. Thanks for sharing from who you are and what you're doing. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's really fun to be here.
Next time, we're going to talk about the Hebraic roots of Christianity.